deaths of incarcerated citizens within Alaska's prison system prompted Governor Bill Walker to appoint a review team to analyze problems within the Department of Corrections and make recommendations about how to address them. The governor also brought in a new commissioner who is no stranger to Alaska law enforcement. The report was released in November. What changes are needed within DOC to keep inmates safe and restore the public's trust? Changes within the Department of Corrections is our discussion today on Talk of Alaska.
Today's program is underwritten in part by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network.
Increase the earning power with a Bachelor of Business Administration degree with a Human Resource Management emphasis from the UAS School of Management. Details at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by UAS.
If you're a rural Alaska resident with an interest in preserving subsistence hunting, trapping, and fishing for future generations, and maintaining an open forum for public expressions, opinions, and concerns regarding subsistence, consider applying for a seat on the Federal Subsistence Regional Advisory Council by Friday, January 29, 2016. More information at 1-800-478-1456 or email subsistence@fws.gov. This message sponsored by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Good morning. The administrative review of the Department of Corrections was not a comfortable read. Governor Walker called the findings disturbing and said DOC was broken. The governor noted that just in the time since he was elected, 15 people have died in jail or prison. The governor fired DOC Commissioner Ron Taylor when the report was complete. Today on Talk of Alaska, we have one of the authors of the review, Dean Williams. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much for being with us today. And also in the studio is the new commissioner for the Department of Corrections, Walt Monaghan.
Good morning.
Welcome, Walt. Nice to have you here, Commissioner Monaghan. Commissioner Monaghan is the former chief of police for Anchorage and is also the former commissioner of public safety. Thanks to both of you for being here today. Dean, I wanted to start with you to sort of lay the groundwork for us. But before I do that, before I ask that question, please join our conversation if you have questions or you have an incarceration story or a story of a family member that you think Commissioner Monaghan should know about. Our number here statewide is 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK. Or if you're in the Anchorage area, you can call 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. So when this report became public, you were quoted, Dean, as saying, right now we have a broken system. How did you go about the work, and what incarceration facilities did you inspect records and procedures for? Just sort of lay out how you went about this review.
When the governor asked me and Joe Hanlon, our contract, former FBI agents, to start on this, the plan that we started with was, let's take a look at some of the most recent deaths that occurred within the last year. And we knew that upon starting this, that things might change. That happens commonly when you start to do a review and things like this. And so what happened during the review is we actually had a couple of deaths that occurred during the review, and those became, while very unfortunate, of course, because they involved someone dying, they also became windows of opportunities for Joe and I to look at some of the systemic things that happened inside the department when, first of all, death occurs, what happens when they're investigated. And so we did look at some of the deaths within the last year. We also looked at some other incidents that occurred that were brought to us, but we really looked at those two deaths that occurred during the review.
Mm-hmm. That's probably likely the biggest concern for Alaska residents is deaths while people are incarcerated. You reviewed, I think, 22 cases overall. Is that correct? Correct.
And some of those were very cursory because we realized that these were people, in fact, were just older or had cancer issues, et cetera. Some of those you could check off rather quickly and not be too concerned about the cause of them.
Right. And you also looked, there were 4 deaths and 3 suicides detailed in the report.
Right.
What happened in these cases that resulted in deaths?
In two of the cases that we highlighted, these were both protective custody cases. In other words, they were there for no criminal allegations whatsoever. They were only there because They had been moved from the hospital, and the goal of that whole statute is to protect people who are not incapable of caring for themselves. Some very unfortunate circumstances happened in both those deaths. I detailed that. We also looked at some of the other suicide cases to see how we were responding, how the department was responding. Did policies make sense in terms of the response? And we detailed some of that. You know, we detailed problems back to the homicide cases. We detailed what we thought a big problem was, which was fact-finding after the incidents. And that's one of the big recommendations that came out of the report, is that our internal affairs sort of section and what we're doing in terms of fact-finding is kind of troubled right now. And that's one of the big recommendations that Joe and I made.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and we're talking today about the review of the Department of Corrections. My guests are DOC Commissioner Walt Monaghan and review report author Dean Williams. You can join our conversation at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK in Anchorage, 550-8422. Commissioner Monaghan, during the governor's November announcement that you'd be the interim commissioner, you discussed plans to review more than 200 policies, procedures. Have you been able to start that work? And what does that look like?
Well, there's a lot of things that the report pointed out that were really archaic in regards to when these policies were first penned. And yes, we have started it. We are actually brought on board somebody who is very adept and proven to have written many, many policies. He's had a career of it. And he's kind of the point man, and he's working with the various units and sections that the policies pertain to kind of flesh out and come up with better policy. So it's as we speak, it is being done.
Are you writing procedures, or do you have people tasked with just wholesale writing new procedures, or are you looking at other systems in other states to figure out what the best practices are? How does one go about this kind of really big change in procedures that maybe haven't been updated in decades?
Actually, it's a combination of both. I can tell you, the individual that his name is Bob. Bob has been in contact with other states and asking very specifically about certain aspects of their policies regarding suicide, for example. And he's getting back feedback and good models that other states are using, as well as working with our own staff to see where the gaps are or what are we doing that's it's unique because of the location or, you know, out in rural areas, obviously, we don't have quite the resources that we do in urban areas. And so you have to basically kind of write a good, concise policy. But then you have to supplement it with individuals' standards of operations, procedures, basically, to flesh out the unique situation. So you want standardization, but you have to allow some room for support, so to speak.
So those are probably the areas that are being created here in the state, I would imagine, because there's probably very little in other states that has the same mix of different situations that we have here in Alaska.
Well, true. I mean, you know, America is basically connected by roads and infrastructure that we don't have necessarily throughout up here. So they are looking into not only national resources, associations and whatnot that deal with corrections, but reaching out to some of the more rural communities or rural states to see what we can do and steal from them.
How long do you anticipate you'll be at the helm of DOC?
Well, actually, that's totally up to the governor. And I know that there is the posting. We're doing a national search for the permanent replacement to do as a corrections commissioner. And hopefully they find somebody that's better than I am, outstanding, though I do personally enjoy the challenges and I like what we're doing over here. And but still, it's certainly up to the boss.
You've been in law enforcement for decades, Commissioner. What has your own assessment of DOC been not only just in the time that you've been at the helm as commissioner there, but even before that, when you worked within the system?
Well, first off, being as a police officer and interfacing with corrections every time I would bring somebody in, I long ago determined that I could not do their job. I mean, it's a difficult and unwavering job that doesn't have any variety to it. I mean, you're basically dealing with folks that most of society doesn't really want them out there. And you're doing it constantly, day in and day out. So it is a very challenging job. As a police officer, I got a good mix of contacts. I mean, I talked to all sorts of folks that had no issues at all and other ones that had big problems. So for me, there was variety. And the folks that work at DOC, not so much.
Mm. 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK. If you'd like to join our conversation, if you'd like to join our conversation today about changes at the Department of Corrections, you can also call us locally, 550-8422 in the Anchorage area, 550-8422, or email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Mr. Williams, I wanted to go back to you now. You recently traveled to St. Michael to meet with the family of Larry Kobuk, a person who had died while incarcerated, and shared with them the video of his last moments. Tell us about that meeting, and what was the effort there? What were you hoping to accomplish by this visit with the family?
I'll take your second question first. The whole goal of the governor having me meet with the families is really just to get their input, to share with them, to talk to them about what happened, provide details that weren't provided to them earlier, and to get their input about releasing of the videos. And the last thing the governor wanted to do, was me as well, was do something that could be more hurtful or harmful than the fact that they've already lost a loved one in the prison system. So that was the first. That was the goal. It's still the governor's decision, no matter what their thoughts were. But that was the goal. Here's what was memorable about visiting Helen and Helen Panichuk and her family in St. Michael. I'd been to St. Michael quite a number of times when I worked in Nome at the DA's office. But in my 30-some year plus career, having retired once already, I can tell you this was a memorable day for me in ways I did not expect. They were sort of suspicious, of course, to begin with about why I was there. And she had all of her other children and siblings there. There's some siblings living here in Anchorage. But her entire goal with me, and it was a very emotional day. I mean, she started off the meeting with a prayer for her children, that they would not be angry and vengeful about what happened to their brother. And that set it off for me in terms of why I was there too. So it was a couple hour, probably at least, meeting with them as I went through the video. They were, I don't know how to describe it except to say that when you watch a loved one die, it's just a tragedy. But they knew that we were standing in the gap with them on that, and they knew that we cared about what happened there. And that we were committed to fixing what we could as humanly possible. I mean, this running prisons, as I'm sure Commissioner Monaghan will tell you now, this is a tough job. He's right. It's a very difficult environment. Bad things happen no matter how well they're being run. I know I've run some juvenile facilities, and sometimes things happen, and you're like, wow. So even when they're running well, it's difficult. But when you have a problem, you have a loss of life, it's significant. So it was an emotional day, but very important. If Helen wasn't moved by it, I was, because it motivated me yet again to say, yeah, you know what, we can have a prison system we're proud of. There's lots of good people that are there already inside. They're working, as Walt mentioned. And so, it was a big day, and I'm glad I went.
Mm-hmm. Are you meeting with other families in this same way?
I am. I was actually a week before that. I was actually in Beaver meeting with the brother of Gilbert Joseph that died in the Fairbanks prison, and on all four of those cases, I either have met or attempted to meet with the next of kin In one case, it was just a phone call, even though we tried to meet. I was in Juneau. They were not able to meet with me. I have met with, and we've met with all four family members.
Do you anticipate at some point that these videos or some of them will be made public?
Two of them already have been made public, and the other two are kind of on the governor's desk right now, and I think a decision is probably coming soon. And on those, I've done everything that can be done in terms of meeting with the family, and so now it's on the governor's desk in terms of whether or not he's going to release the next two.
All right. This is Talk of Alaska. We're talking today with Commissioner Walt Monaghan of the Department of Corrections and report author of an administrative review of policies and procedures of the prison system, the Department of Corrections system here. Dean Williams is also with us. You can join us at 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-8255, or in Anchorage 550-8422. 550-8422. Commissioner, what do you think can be done right away? You mentioned that the procedures are being rewritten right now, so that's ongoing. And what do you think what's on like the 6-month timeline? And have you developed sort of a lookout for 6 months, a year, 2 years, what you'd like to see? Or how are you going about the scope of this?
Well, it's a large organization stretched out all across the state. And one of the things that you have to kind of look for right off the get-go, aside from the issues that Dean has pointed out in the report, is everything from morale to training to screening and everything in between. My first month basically is trying to get an overlay of the land, so to speak, and looking at some of the things. Already we've made some changes that I see that some of the complaints that we most often get are what we call time and accounting. And basically individuals who are incarcerated, they need to know when they're going to be released. You know, when is their sentence served? And we're looking into the policies. We're working with other entities to help us so that we can get a system that's basically standardized. And at one point, I was kind of surprised that we had one individual basically for the Anchorage and South Central area that was just kind of working all that by himself. And from someone who's worked in other organizations, I really have been loath to have single points of failure. I mean, individuals that for reasons out of their control may not be able to show up for work for a while. And that would impact so many others. So little things like that we're trying to rectify, as well as, you know, trying to gauge the morale and again, our training needs and how often do we do that. So there's a lot of things to be done, but I think they're all things that are quite doable.
Ron Taylor had been on the job for less than a year. The identified problems certainly didn't start with him. What did the governor say about why he decided that he needed to make this change at the top?
Is that a question for me or Dean?
Yes, for you. I'm sorry, Commissioner.
Okay. You know, I know Ron, and I've worked with him in my previous life when I was with the Native Justice Center. And
one of your previous lives.
That's true. That I think that what Ron was doing had a very specific focus on it. And sometimes if you get so focused on one aspect of the entire process, it may cause delay or let other aspects of it, a large organization like this, kind of wither a little bit. And so I think that was what was happening. And as it was explained to me, that there were some issues that were brought and they needed to be addressed. And I can't speak for Ron or anybody else, but obviously that the governor thought that they weren't being addressed quick enough.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go to the phones. We have a caller in Nome. Margaret is joining us. Hello, Margaret.
Yes, hello. Very pleasant good morning. About the Department of Correction and the courts, sometimes they have to communicate. What I noticed is, even if you speak the language perfect or something, people need an interpreter present in court. And when you go to the courthouse, they have all kinds of languages, not even one native language. I mean, I got a little railroaded, a miscommunicazione. Yeah, one wrong word can change the sentence. And there are many natives I met, and it's all the same old story. They are used as toys, domestic violence, oh my honey, but then they say, I don't want to be alone, yeah? So, and the native people, they're very quiet, yeah? They don't say much. And I said, speak up. And the other gentleman, I lived in Nome, yeah? And I flew into the bush, into Unaclade, and I wasn't in St. Mary's, but I was in Stebbins. They don't speak up. And I said, look, then I got a little loud, I have a loud voice. You have to voice your opinion. No use, yeah? And it goes on and on. I cannot tell everything, but Nome was a great experience. And I was myself incarcerated, yeah? I don't want to badmouth anybody. You know, it's a job, and it's a very tough job to work in the Department of Corrections. But they're good and bad, like, everywhere. You know, lawyers, doctors, whatever, judges, blah. I just want to bring up miscommunication. You say one wrong thing, they understand something totally different. So if you want an interpreter, it should be granted. Yeah, okay. And I have to fight my own case now right to the governor, yeah?
Well, that's an excellent point, Margaret, that...
it is an excellent point, yes. Because it tore my heart out. You know, they came from Barrow, they came from all over. And I said, why don't you speak up? Mm. No, they're humble.
Well, thank you so much. That's an excellent point, that language can be a huge barrier for people. And when you're not used to already, you know, you're nervous or scared because you're coming into the system that many people are fearful of if they have dust up with the law and they have to go into the court system. And then you have another barrier, which is a language barrier. How are those types of things being looked at, being addressed? Was this part of the review, Mr. Williams?
I guess I can answer it this way. If in our culture, if you're a non-Alaska Native, for example, and you go into a jail, it's a shocking system. If you're a good, if you have a good person and you've just made a mistake. Going into any jail prison system is a shocking experience. And good people do make mistakes, and there's lots of people in prison who've are one-timers and they're out. They've made a mistake. If you're from the Native community, and I've dealt with this a great deal. Of course, when I lived in Nome, I ran juvenile facilities, had lots of Native kids that were in my custody. It's even more shocking because the system even seems more foreign. And as Commissioner Monaghan knows, having the background that he has, his cultural background, et cetera, this is a system that's foreign in many ways. And so part of my goal, my hope for where we go as a prison system is that we really focus on the fact that people come from different walks of life. Prison for a normal person is going to be scary and uncomfortable experience. It's prison. We've got, you know, your freedom's taken away. But my hope is that we understand that we expand the humanity of and understand that when you live in a state like Alaska with its many diverse backgrounds, that it still has to make sense to the people that are inside the prison and incarcerated. Rules have to seem fair, and the system has to seem fair. And you do that by increasing professionalism and all the other things that we've sort of talked about in the report.
Well, I know that that's difficult to cultural sensitivity and understanding, being able to address people in a way that they can better take in, so that it seems more relevant to their own life experience is really important, so that there's better understanding. I know myself, just having grown up in a village of 199 people, going to the next town that was, 2,000 people seemed like we were going to a big city, and it was When we changed schools, there was a lot of stress just in that. So I haven't been to jail, but I can't imagine how difficult that is for anyone, as you mentioned. And Commissioner Monaghan, is there room? I mean, the incarceration system has to be somewhat one size fits all because people are being incarcerated. But we also want to help people reintegrate into society in a good way. What has to happen, do you think, or what should be going on within the Department of Corrections to make sure that people from other cultures, that maybe English isn't their first language, understand what's going on and can really grasp what they need to do in order to have success when they are able to leave?
Well, there's a couple of fronts on that. First off, overall, from the 30,000-foot view, our Supreme Court recognizes that there are cultural differences, and they are actually incorporating changes in the way the courts are operating now to help facilitate those changes. So it's a good thing because judges are now instructed to be more aware, and I think that in itself is a big, giant step forward. In regards to DOC, the one area I think that we have a very difficult time, not only in recruiting for DOC, but also for the Alaska State Troopers, for example, is we need more representation from the people that we serve. And finding a way to recruit more Alaska Natives into both the Troopers and the Department of Corrections would be a great benefit for everybody involved. And it's an employment. There's all sorts of right, good values that I think Alaska Natives, along with many other populations, have that would facilitate those kind of making the best out of a bad situation, so to speak. And honestly, the Union for Corrections Officers, they've actually broached that topic with me. How do we recruit more Alaska Natives to become correction officers? And we need to work on that. We need to work on that as a community and as a state.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go back to the phones. We have, we're going to go to Kevin in Wasilla. Hi, Kevin.
Yeah, hi. Good morning, everyone. I worked for the department for 23 years. In fact, I think I was superintendent up in Nome when Dean was running the youth facility there back in the early 2000s. There's so much I could say. I did write policy for the department for a couple of years back in 2007, 2008. And policies are very important, but I think something that's always been a big thing with me is making sure that whatever standards are set, values are set, are communicated down, all the way from the commissioner down through the admin staff to the managers, the supervisors, to the floor staff, to the prisoners. Those expectations of performance. And I think we have a tendency sometimes, when I was with the department, there's a tendency to sometimes for some people to get behind a desk and not move out of there for avoidance. Anyway, that's my comment. I think, you only have so much staff, and you're only going to get so much staff. But having that staff out there moving and talking to the prisoners and having the supervisors talking to the floor staff and all the way down, you can write all the policies you want, but unless that's happening, you're going to be lost.
Well, thank you, Kevin, for the call. Comments from either one of you about...
Well, actually, one, thank you. This is Walt. Thank you, Kevin, for your service and what you've all done in the past, and I agree with you. Having folks basically not, it's part of the culture that needs to be addressed. And I agree, leaders need to jump up on that horse and ride amongst the troops and sit down and listen to them. You know, there's a couple of things I learned pretty early as an officer is that people need to be acknowledged and accepted, no matter where they're from, who they are, what they're doing. As long as they're doing something that's good, then you should acknowledge that. You should show your appreciation for it. Your job as a leader has to be to support everybody above you, and by meaning above you, those who are actually performing the service that is expected. So in at DOC, the commissioner is the lowest position that it, and as it should be, to work to aid and support and drive that through to all the people in between, that their job is to help those who are actually rendering the service. So I agree with you, and we are working on that, and I think we're getting it, that we're seeing some changes. I mean, I've seen emails amongst the upper management, at least, that somebody had made a comment the other day, I'm glad we're talking again.
All right. Well, we are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll continue our conversation about changes within the Department of Corrections. And we'll also take your calls as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to having conversations that help businesses and individuals succeed financially, because an open dialogue can open doors. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
Did you know the average cost of a DUI in Alaska is over $24,000? Each December, there is a spike in impaired driving-related accidents. Consider the real costs of driving impaired. It could result in the loss of your hard-earned money, your job, or worse, you could lose your life. The Alaska Highway Safety Office reminds you to drive sober or get pulled over. This message sponsored by the Alaska Highway Safety Office.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're discussing the Department of Corrections and a report that was released in November looking at changes that need to be made within the system. You can join our conversation at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK. Or in Anchorage, you can call 550-8422. Or email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. I want to return to the phones again, and we are going to go to CJ in Wasilla. Hi, CJ.
Hello.
Did you have a question for our guest today?
Yes, thank you so much. I had a couple quick comments. My first comment was that I have been visiting my husband out at Goose Creek Correctional Center in Wasilla since February. I'm out there regularly, and one of the things that I have noted is that the facility, even with the policies that existed, the facility was not in alignment with those policies in many different areas. And so if someone was depending on statewide policy and if those statewide policies gave prisoners certain rights, the local facility policy was not necessarily in alignment with those. And even staff members that I talked to who had expressed frustration and pointed out to their own supervisors that they were out of alignment with the statewide requirements were basically being ignored and being told not to bring it up. So while fixing statewide policy is very, very important, I think it's equally important to make sure that facilities are actually consciously carrying those out. And then the other comment that I had or question that I had was that at that specific facility, in the middle of the investigation by the governor's office, an entire mod of men who were under protective custody was uprooted. Their mod was disbanded, and they were all thrown into solitary confinement, 22-hour-a-day lockdown in a couple of different mods in the facility. They were cut off from their families. Initially, they were told that they would not be allowed to have contact visitation at all. And then we fought them and fought as hard as we could. And we eventually were able to say statewide policy required that every inmate who wasn't being punished be given at least one contact hour of visitation a week. And eventually, they conceded and gave that 1 hour a week. But they have absolutely been... I would say, you know, kind of cruel to the families, because they're offering us, you know, a variety of days of the week that we could do a contact visit, but they're only allowing us to choose one of those days when they could facilitate all of those days. So they're still very much intentionally cutting the families off from those inmates. And that contact visitation is so precious, especially for someone who's locked into a cell 22 hours a day. And that kind of housing is known to cause mental deterioration. And those men have been stuck in there since September 16th of 2015. And so I guess my question is, what's going to be done about that situation? And, how are you going to improve things so that, you know, the health and safety of our family members who are locked in there is under consideration and it's not considered some kind of long-term solution?
Thank you, CJ, for the call. Commissioner Monaghan.
Well, first off, CJ, I'm unaware of this. This is going on. So please let, if you can contact my office and kind of give me more of the details, I would gladly look into it because I think that I agree with you. The best way for individuals to get through the incarceration period is to have that support, to have that contact. It surprises me a little bit because at the supervisors meeting, which I included all the superintendents from across the state, the theme that I heard most often from them is that people should be in their care, should be treated with respect, which we all agree. That's how it's supposed to be. So please contact my office with more details on that and let me take a look at it. And if you send me an email, I'll be able to get back with you on that, okay?
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for the call, CJ. Before we go back to the phones, I wanted to ask a question about the timeline. The review, I think, took 11 weeks. Is that correct, Mr. Williams?
Yeah, 11. There was an extra week in there somewhere, but 11, 12 weeks. Mm-hmm.
That seems like sort of a short window for such a large task. Did that feel like enough time?
No, it didn't feel like enough time, but I understand why, and I kind of set that limitation to myself, so I'm not blaming the governor by any chance. I said, hey, I think I can do this in this period of time. We knew that it was going to be a heavy lift for a short period of time, but had we needed more time, I know the governor would have conceded certainly to give me more, but really, honestly, I think in that time frame, I had looked at enough. I think in the report, you can see that I detailed in terms of factual incident enough that it sort of helped us give us a picture. So it did feel a little bit rushed, but I think we arrived where I'd hoped we would.
Did you want to condense the time just because of a sense of urgency about getting started with this task, or why did you kind of decide to put those sideboards on yourself?
Well, there was a couple things, and there was really a prominent piece of this report. So when we got to a particular place, I knew that there were certain things we were coming to conclusions on that needed to be addressed sooner than later. I'll give you one quick example. The whole aspect of being able to investigate ourselves and DOC being able to accurately and forthrightly investigate itself is a huge issue. We've gotten it wrong in the report several times, and I articulate that in the report several times. And so that one recommendation, which the governor now has tasked me at the long-term plan about what we're going to do about that, is extremely important because building public trust means you can tell the truth no matter what happens, no matter whether or not things went right or they went wrong. And you have to have an independent way of doing that. And so as we approach that issue, we need to start work on that sooner than later. And so if there was really something else uncovered or we didn't really get there, then I would ask for more time. The second thing I'll just quickly say is that this is ongoing. Mm-hmm. So even after the report has been released, our office has been getting, I get mail on this almost every day now, as well as inquiries. I'm sure Commissioner Monaghan is now too. And so I think that we have sort of broken through the issue, and people know that we're listening now, and they know that we're serious about making change, and that we're not, this is not going away in terms of a governor's priority. And so, we're still getting information, and we're still looking at what's coming to us.
All right, we're going to go back to the phones. Josie is in Anchorage. Hi, Josie.
Hi.
Do you have
Thanks
a question?
For taking my call. I wanted some clarification on something that Commissioner Monaghan said a little while ago about dealing with people who most of the population doesn't actually want to be there. And I just wanted clarification. if you're specifically talking about corrections officers in the jails, or if you're also talking about police officers, I guess I don't know how much those two lines of work blend, because I do think that most people do want police officers, you know, around, but they don't resent their presence. I don't know about the corrections officers. So I just wanted some clarification.
Commissioner?
Well, Josie, what I meant is that we have a difficult time of recruiting qualified people who should be correctional officers. It is a difficult position. And again, I think I mentioned as a former police officer, I knew I could not do their job. It's that demanding. And so it's like I said, it's a steady diet of a lot of negativity at times. I'm not even going to begin to tell you that that everybody in jail is a bad person. I think that, quite honestly, the vast majority of folks that I have ever taken to jail as a policeman were actually good people who just made a poor choice. Our society basically is pretty lucky that we don't have, you know, all the Jeffrey Dahmers and Joshua Wades. That there's only a few of them, and those definitely need to be warehoused. But everybody else, I think, deserves a chance to come on back and jump back into society. And there's a big push for everybody, from everybody, to get that done. So I hope that answers your question, Josie.
I guess I'm sort of, it seems like if corrections officers feel that way, that the people they're helping don't want them there, it seems like that would feed into a really unhealthy loop for a relationship. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, if police officers feel that way, that, you know, their presence and the help isn't wanted, it seems like that would decrease the chances that they could actually help people.
Well, I agree with you. It is perception. And do people get jaded, both cops and corrections officers? Of course they do. You know, we're human. But realistically, my job, basically, as I see it, is to make sure that everyone that I work with has the opportunity to feel supported, feel appreciated, and get them back to the spot where they basically believed when they first applied that they can make a difference.
Thanks so much for the call, Josie, and for raising those issues. You know, it's certainly, as you noted, Commissioner Monaghan, it's a job that is very stressful, and I can't imagine having to deal with that level of stress every day, and I am sure that that's something that you have to watch for, is that burnout and cycling people into maybe other positions or helping them find a way to recharge their own batteries so that they can do a good job is going to be very, very important. Let's go back to the phones again for a moment. Francine is also in Anchorage. Hi, Francine.
Hello, this is Francine Harbour. I want to say hello to Commissioner Monaghan. It's really good to see you in that position. The governor picked the right man. I'm the executive director of the National Alliance on Mental Illness in Anchorage, NAMI Anchorage. And I have two questions, and then I'll get off the line. One is, does the report have any analysis and recommendations regarding people either in prison or on probation who are experiencing mental illness? And then second, is there a recommendation in the report that the Department of Corrections increase its budget so that more of its officers and administrators can attend the crisis intervention team? It's called the CIT program. Officer or Commissioner Monaghan knows about that program, so that the people, the personnel of DOC can better understand how to communicate and interact with individuals experiencing mental illness. And I'll get off the line. Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks for the call, Francine.
Francine, this is Dean. Thanks for the call. So the report doesn't specifically address mental health issues as part of the report. That said, however, of course, it's a well-known fact that our prison systems has a whole host of people that have serious, significant psychological, psychiatric issues. And so this gets back to systemic issues that we did address that were indirectly in terms of issues about policies and chains of command, and why those things are sort of sound dry on one hand but are extremely important about dealing with people who have psychiatric conditions, is that you establish policies and units in places that are best able to handle those individuals. And those policies and best guidance, best practices are what keeps things safer when you're dealing with people with psychiatric issues. And even in the juvenile system, we had certain kids that we discovered that we were in fights with a lot more than we should have. And guess what? They were kids that had fetal alcohol effect, who had budding psychiatric issues. And so you discovered that your approach in dealing with them would greatly reduce them getting restrained, greatly reduce staff getting hurt. And so that's the reason why policy updates, the reason why chains of command and developing, looking at other things, while they're not directly related to your question, in some ways they are very relevant, because they create environments where things go better and you have less problems with people who weren't functioning well on the outside, less also well and not functioning well on the inside. The other one other quick thing is that it's the reason why in the report I was very slightly pretty critical, I guess, of solitary confinement. Mm. And as a systemic issue, I think we're overusing solitary confinement. This is not the fault, oh, by the way, of the correction officers who were enacting this system at all. I've made this really clear. These are systemic issues, but it's our responsibility to take a hard look at what we're doing with solitary confinement. It's hugely damaging. I've had multiple calls. For a while there, it seemed like every day I was getting a call from somebody who said I was in solitary. And it's been acting as a jail within a jail. There is a room, there's a place for solitary confinement, I suppose, in the most extreme circumstances. But other states have made great improvements, and the federal prisons have as well. And it's the one why I spent some time and articulated that about the juveniles that we found that were in solitary confinement for almost a year. It's very damaging, and it's one of the things we can change that does not cost any extra money.
Well, Francine, go ahead, Commissioner, please.
You know, Francine, I appreciate the call and hello again. The aspect about when I first got there, basically, I was told that DOC is the largest mental health provider in the state. And we have a significant portion of our community that we serve that have those kind of issues, as Dean just mentioned up. And yes, I am well aware that we do need to increase our training for our correctional officers so they can better understand what they're dealing with. We've already discussed that. We've got a whole medical staff that tries to keep on top of all the issues that we're encountering that do that. But they, too, they have a difficult time recruiting, and we do have vacancies, and that's unfortunate. But we need to work on that, and we will.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Eleanor is in Manicotic. Hi, Eleanor.
Hi, how are you? I have a couple of things I need, that are issues that the state needed to investigate the juvenile cases. And the state troopers should target only certain people. And
we're having a hard time, Eleanor. We're having a hard time understanding you. Eleanor, we're having a hard time understanding you. Can you, maybe it's your phone, I'm not sure. Just, can you start over?
Yeah. Is that better?
A little better, yes. Thank you.
Well, the state needs to investigate the juvenile cases. And the state troopers or the juvenile officer that targeted only certain people, put them out of school and had them dropped out of school because of that. And they used to be misdemeanors until parents made that to felons. Now they are felons based on those false charges. And then we have mental humans now that were created because of solitary confinement and TB shots. And I heard they were giving pills to make them suicidal. And meaning the certain troopers had to abuse the system, breaking them into homes and making so many false charges. There's a lot of people in jail for a long, long period of time now based on their charges. And you investigate the public defenders who did not represent their clients, who lied to the judges, who lied to their clients, with threatening them if they went to trial that they would go to, that the judge would put them in jail for a very long time, give them out the fine and all that stuff. And you can investigate the judges.
Yeah.
And I don't think we have an administrative court, because I heard that administrative courts do not stay in oath to uphold state laws. And you need to repeal the laws that were created in communities to make criminals of our people based on laws that are illegal in the state of Alaska.
Eleanor.
And we prefer total beliefs not based on state laws, because VPSOs and state troopers seem to be tricky.
Okay, Eleanor, we're having a hard time understanding you, so Commissioner Monaghan wants to respond quickly, and then we'll see if we can't get the two of you connected so that you can better explain to him what your concerns are.
Yeah, thank you, Eleanor, for reaching out like this. The good thing is on the horizon. Like I mentioned earlier, the courts are looking how we can better interface with, for example, tribal courts, tribal police, and work cooperatively so that we can handle issues, especially with juveniles that do non-violent kind of crimes, that they're handled within the community. So that's in the works. They're still discussing, and it should turn out to be better for everybody involved.
Thanks for the call, Eleanor. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll continue the discussion about changes at the Department of Corrections as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station.
The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2016 directory for older Alaskans. To order the directory or to learn more, go to SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
If preserving subsistence hunting, trapping, and fishing is important to you, and if you have a knowledge of regional subsistence, consider applying for a 3-year term on the Federal Subsistence Regional Advisory Council by Friday, January 29, 2016. Councils provide advice and recommendations on subsistence harvest on federal public lands and waters. Information at 1-800-478-1456 or email subsistence@fws.gov. This message sponsored by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're discussing changes within the Department of Corrections today. An email question came in with a question about how much does it cost per year to keep an inmate in state prison? And then a second question about what costs are associated with prisoner deaths. So first of all, the cost of incarceration. Is there sort of a general number, or does it, I imagine it varies widely based on what the needs are of the inmate, does it not?
My understanding is that right now it roughly is about $154 a day per what they call hard bed, somebody that's inside. And it could be much larger, of course, if there's medical issues or mental issues that have to be addressed that require outside medication or visitation type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a good average figure. And it's about half that if they're on probation or parole.
And what about costs associated with prisoner deaths?
I guess that would depend on the actual means of the death. I mean, like Dean said, there's some folks that they were going to pass on because of medical issues, regardless of where they were. Those we try to address as we try to return the body, for example, to the place of arrest, which it would be the same if they were alive.
Mm-hmm.
That does run, it depends on the fare and the costs of that. But there isn't a good hard figure that I'm aware of.
We're going to go back to the phones. Gail is in St. Mary's. Hi, Gail.
Hi. Good morning. Mr. Monaghan, I had a question for you. What's your insight on recruiting and funding for more VPOs in the village?
Well, actually, I think that they do need to get more because it's It's making the presence of police officers, EPOs, VPSOs, they make communities feel safer. There is someone to go to if there's an emergency, and they're trained and equipped to address that emergency, rather than waiting for weather to clear or a trooper to come hours, if not days later. So I am a strong supporter, and how to get that done, that's the challenge, the $64 million question that I think a lot of folks in my positions, both before and in the future, are still trying to grapple with. But I think there's a way. We're getting closer and closer, I think, each time.
Thank you so much for the call, Gail. We had an email comment. Go ahead.
I was going to say, because our VPOs are the first responders, and they deal with traumas such as ATV accidents, a person dying, or a drowning, or a suicide, or and are they, how do you say it, mental health after traumas like this?
Sure, getting the appropriate care that they need themselves.
You know, a lot of the VPOs and TPOs, as well as VPSOs, they can still reach out to the troopers, because troopers have a pretty good network on what we call post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, that help them deal with the situation. But it certainly is good if the community and members of the community actually reach out and wrap their arms around the individual as well.
Thanks for the call, Gail. There was an email from a listener who said that that they think it's important that as part of this review to recognize truly excellent people who also work in the Department of Corrections. He says they are the ones who can reach a balance between being strict enough and treating prisoners with decency and respect. These corrections officers make the difference in helping prisoners live a better life when they get out of the system. And he says, I hope the best employees don't become discouraged by the review and leave the state. I'm sure that you hope the same thing. I would say that my last question would be, what, up against this budget deficit problem that we have, how difficult will it be to make these changes that need to be made? Is there a big budgetary component to this?
Obviously, budget's going to dictate a lot. But there's some things that basically do not cost the money, so to speak. It's a situation that the support, the appreciation, in fact, last week, I asked what kind of recognition program. You know, we've been focusing on the negativity, you know, because that's the stuff that normally hits the news. But there's 1,200 employees with DOC. They are responsible for 12,000 individuals, and most of it is correct. They do exactly what they're supposed to do and meet expectations. They just need to be supported.
Right. Well, let's end on a positive note. And thank you so much to my guests, Commissioner Walt Monaghan, who is now at the helm of the Department of Corrections. Also, Special Assistant to the Governor, Dean Williams, who wrote the report, the review. Thank you both for being here. Thanks to our engineer, Ron Zastro, and Josh Edge on phones. I'm Lori Townsend. We'll be back next week.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2016 directory for older Alaskans. To order the directory or to learn more, go to SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.